Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. It's 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, November 21st. I'm Alan Shartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from New York Oncology Hematology, now offering stereotactic radiosurgery in Saratoga County, SRS treatment for inoperable tumors, available at their Clifton Park office, newyorkoncology.com. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is one of my favorites, Dr. Bridget Finn. Dr. Finn is a licensed sex therapist. I'll bet the phones light up right away. Educator and researcher here to answer your questions about sexual health, how it can affect your health overall. We get a lot of calls, so start dialing now, 1-800-348-2551. Okay, everybody, 1-800-348-2551. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. The World Health Organization defines sexual health as a state of physical, emotional, mental, and social well-being in relation to sexuality. It is not merely the absence of disease, dysfunction, or infirmity. Joining us in the studio today is one of my favorites, is Dr. Bridget Finn. She's the founder and president of the Capital Region Center for Sexual Health. She specializes in therapy for couples and individuals, has had 30 years of experience in counseling, improving relationships both inside and outside the bedroom. Dr. Finn earned a doctorate in human sexuality from the University of Pennsylvania and is a guest lecturer at Albany Medical College in the Behavioral Psychiatry, Obstetrics and Gynecology and Family and Community Medicine departments. She provides training for medical students, resident physicians, and faculty on sexual health and functioning. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, great to see you, Bridget Finn. Thanks for coming in again.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what you do and what do you do in a day? I mean, what happens?
Well, I'm a sex therapist. I also do education and research. I'm the founder and president of the Capital Region Center for Sexual Health. I work with individuals and couples who are having challenges and questions around intimacy and sex, and they come into my office with a broad range of concerns around their relationship, around sexual functioning, how to make it better, how to make some changes.
Well, there's certain mythology that goes on in all of this that, you know, men want it more, women want it less. Is that true?
No, that's not true. What's exciting about being here today is having the opportunity to talk about some of those myths.
Yeah.
And the idea that men want it all the time and that they're rock hard 24/7 and that women don't want it is a dangerous stereotype because it sets both of the genders up to feel pretty lousy, quite frankly. I have plenty of male clients who are struggling with desire and arousal and feel less of a man because they don't fit that stereotype and that myth. And I have plenty of women who enjoy sex, who want good sex and intimacy with their partners and can feel guilty about really wanting to apprehend that. So the myths and sort of what is being sold and what we're buying can really get people into some real difficult challenges.
Now, I know in the past you've given me some rules for what people should or shouldn't do. One of them, as I remember it, is that you should, in your courting stage, you should pretty well figure out whether you're compatible then.
Absolutely. That is so important and is something that we don't encourage. Sexual compatibility is as important as any other type of compatibility. But typically what happens is we kind of think of it as something that will either transpire on its own, that it has a life of its own. When you meet somebody at some point, sooner than later, you need to have the conversation of how important is sex to you? How important is intimacy to you, both emotional and physical? What role does it play in a relationship for you? Are you willing to embrace it as a lifestyle? Couples who have good sex and intimacy embrace it as a lifestyle. It's an active participatory process that they step into. So the idea that sexual compatibility is something that's over there that we don't really discuss gets people into a lot of trouble further on in the relationship.
Well, to put it mildly, I mean, it might be offensively for some, so turn your radios off, is one thing is to talk about it. The other thing is to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, talking about it, everybody has an intellectual approach to things, but doing it may be a very different thing.
Yeah, it can be. And when people ask me what impacts sex and intimacy with an individual or with a couple, my answer is everything. You know, from the food you are eating to not eating, to the sleep you aren't getting, to the job that you hate.
Food has something to do with it?
Oh, absolutely. Our nutrition just, it sets us up to feel well or not well. And everything that you do in terms of your lifestyle, in terms of your personal joy and happiness, sexual health is a vibrant union of mind, body, and spirit. So all of those pieces have to be running optimally in order to have an optimal sex and intimacy lifestyle or relationship. If you are someone who enjoys sex, for whom it's very important, and you want that to be part of your life moving forward, you need to find a partner, if you want a partner, who feels the same way, who holds the same value around sex and intimacy. If you find opposites don't attract in this area, in other words, you need to find someone who's interested in the same behaviors, who holds the same idea about sex and intimacy over the long haul, who really shares your values about how that plays out in a relationship.
How come we have so many Victoria's Secrets and intimate, you know, and lingerie places in this country? Is there something to that?
Well, I don't know, because that thong underwear, I never hear a whole lot of good stuff about how comfortable that is. You know, we live in a very dysfunctional context when it comes to sex and intimacy. And I always start there. We live in a society, in a culture where the messages are mixed. There's hypocrisy, there's fear, there's shame, there's silence. There's unhealthy messages from family, unhealthy messages from school. We still have very little sex education. The boys are still coming home with deodorant, and the girls are still getting a tampon. So we haven't come very far. So the larger social context of sex is very dysfunctional, and it sets people up to have a very difficult time with sex and intimacy as they go throughout life.
Ladies and gentlemen, as much as I love doing this, I have to tell you that the phones are open right now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You know that you've been itching to ask a question or two, and here we have the expert. So, Bridget, let me ask you this. Can you correlate sexual desire ever, or sexual mores, with religion? I mean, your name is Bridget Mary Margaret,
yes,
right?
The Irish Catholic sex therapist.
Catholic sex therapist.
Yeah.
So can you begin to see, you know, if an Orthodox Jewish person comes in, or a devout Catholic comes in with these mixed messages that they've been getting all of their lives, can you see whether or not, can you say, uh-oh, here's another one?
Well, what's interesting is we have an idea that particular religious backgrounds, such, for example, as Catholic, would pose a certain level of challenges and problems more than maybe another religion. But my experience is that everyone was given a dose of something. So there's plenty of folks within all different religions and spiritualities who have a varying degree of challenges and concerns around sex and sexuality. I've never seen it be glaring in one versus another. It's pretty much across the board.
Well, we actually do have a lot of phones ringing now. I just wanted to ask you one more thing. I was talking to you before about the work of Albert Ellis years ago, who said, you know, women try to be attractive, but then we put a message out there that you can't do that because we'll shame you. We'll say something bad about you.
Exactly.
Is that specific to America, do you think, or do you think this is a international issue?
Well, I think it's an international issue. I also think, you know, women are sexualized in a different way. And I also know that there was a research study just recently that came out with males, I believe, in the late 40s onward, saying that they are not interested or caring so much about how they look or what they're eating, or they can kind of just let themselves go. And what I will tell you is that keeping yourself healthy and attractive for your own self is absolutely imperative. It reflects self-care. And so it's never good, regardless of the gender, to let yourself go, because you're not going to feel good in your own life.
We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll start to take all kinds of telephone calls. People are lining up. Okay, 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from Beacon Fine Art Printing. Beacon, offering museum-quality digital archival printing, scanning, retouching, and mounting for artists, photographers, galleries, and art enthusiasts. BeaconFineArtPrinting.com. Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design, featuring Cambria quartz countertops, Merillat cabinetry, and more. Designer consultations available, CurtisLumber.com. The University at Albany Biomedical Sciences Department, offering graduate fellowships to train in the New York State Public Health Laboratory, now accepting PhD and master's applications. UAlbany BMS. Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, actsurg.com. And from The Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, presenting Steve Forbert, Saturday, December 3rd at 8 p.m., thelinda.org for more information.
And we are back, thanks to Zachary Malloy. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you'll be on with a wonderful woman, Bridget Finn, Dr. Bridget Finn, founder and president of the Capital Region Center for Sexual Health. She specializes in therapy for couples and individuals. Okay, let's start at the top. We'll go to Bill. All right, Bill, you're on. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, how are we doing today?
So far, so good.
So my question for the doctor, I'm a 26-year-old male, and I don't know if you would call it a erectile dysfunction, but I just been seeming to have an issue with getting aroused, and I know that a 26-year-old male, that shouldn't be an issue.
Well, Bill, you're not alone in that, actually. Again, that's one of the myths that we have out there, is that it's an older man's concern. I work with men across a wide range of ages who are challenged by arousal concerns. The question I would want to know is if you're self-pleasuring, if you are or not, and if you are, if there's a difference in your erections when you're with yourself versus a partner.
No, I can't even, you know, get aroused to self-pleasure.
Okay. And so have you been able to have an opportunity to speak with a urologist about this?
Could you repeat that?
Have you had the opportunity to meet with a urologist to talk about this?
No, I have not. Is that where I should go?
Yeah, I would definitely urge you to go to a urologist and talk with him or her regarding your concerns. And what they are likely to do is to get a testosterone level from you, and they're going to see if there's any kind of physical issue happening. But what I will say is that it's always best, too, to work with the psychological journey that oftentimes accompanies the physical problem, okay? So even if something does have a physical origin, it becomes an emotional and mental concern. So it's important that erectile dysfunction or any sexual issue be treated with that combination of approach, with some sex therapy as well as with some medical input to see if you have anything going on for you physiologically. That would be my first step for you, would be to get an appointment with a urologist that you feel comfortable with.
Bill, thank you very much for your good call. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, thank you, Alan. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye. And now we'll go to Lorraine in Windham. All right, Lorraine, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
We're good.
Well, I'm almost 69 years old, and I had a hysterectomy with my ovaries out when I was 27, and I've been on Premarin for years and also recently Estrace cream, but I'm still having painful intercourse, and I was wondering if there's anything else I can do sort of on my own.
Well, I would want to know, Lorraine, how are you? Are you currently in a relationship?
Yes, I'm married.
Okay, and my one of my first questions would be to explore with you how you're feeling about your relationship at this point.
Well, we've been married 40 years, mm-hmm. So pretty good.
Okay, so you're happy and you're connected with emotional intimacy, even though you're having trouble with the physical?
Yes, I would say for the most part, you know.
Okay, and are you working with an MD around your concerns about the vaginal tissue?
Yes, I see a gynecologist, and I've had Premarin and Estrace, but it still is
not great.
Painful,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, and the problem with painful intercourse is then we start to lose desire, because why would we want to be doing something that's creating pain? So it becomes a challenge psychologically as well as relationally. I'd like to encourage you to, if you're not already, to be sure that you're exploring other behaviors sexually that are compelling and satisfying outside of intercourse, such as oral sex. Is that something that you're open to doing?
Right. Oh, yeah. That's fine. But it's just, you know, mm-hmm. a shame, because it used to be enjoyable. And it's when it's painful, it's like,
you
know?
Exactly. And why would you want to move towards that, right? So the most important thing is that you and your partner are getting the support that you need to explore all kinds of alternative ways to experience satisfying intimacy, as well as talking about the difficulty it is for the two of you to keep things exciting in light of the pain. So it's not always about getting rid of it. That would be fantastic. But it's also about figuring out how to exist with it in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Live with it.
Yeah.
Okay, I gotcha.
Okay.
Because there's not really much more that can be done after that, really.
Right. But at the same time, your response to it and your partner's response to it in terms of attitude is hugely important regarding where the relationship will be going and how well the two of you will navigate the challenge.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Got it. Well,
appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Bye,
great idea.
Yeah. Thank you. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Carlos in Clifton Park. Okay, Carlos, you're on. Carlos.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, me and my girlfriend have been recently exploring in a power exchange kind of sexual BDSM kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, is there any kind of, what are the risks of her having some kind of negative mental health reaction from this?
Well, it depends upon entirely how steady your relationship is, how strong it is, and also what her ideals are around sex and intimacy, what messages she may have received around certain types of behaviors and around certain types of engagements. So it's always important. You know, I always say if two people are on the same page and it works for both people and it's inspiring and compelling, then you won't have a problem. It takes two yeses and one no, right? If one person is uncomfortable or feeling somehow, a mixed message or they're not quite certain, then that's when you're going to have troubles. This is where it becomes really important to continue that conversation, not just one time, but as you're going along with each other.
Yes, after each session, I make sure everything was good. If anything that wasn't liked, gets tossed out and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. It's really about having the conversation and, again, finding someone that's compatible with you in terms of likes and behaviors and values around sex and intimacy. But the most important thing is that you continue to process what you're doing over time so that you're both on the same page.
Is there a danger of intellectualizing sex?
We could talk anything to death, right? So it's just the matter of, as long as the person that you're talking with, as long as the two of you have that in common, how you want to talk about it, when you'd like to talk about it, it's really customized for two people. My mantra is really have the conversation and continue the conversation over time. It's not a one-shot deal.
Thanks, Carlos.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and we'll go to Julie in Po-Town, Poughkeepsie. Julie is now on. Okay, Julie, your turn.
Hi.
Hi, Julie.
Such a pleasure to be back from Florida and listening to you on the radio. Anyway, my friend has a grandson who is mentally ill, lives in a home, and, you know, goes to a fabulous school. And he, in the past, you know, he has, like, dumped over bird nests and sort of scared his grandmother and like that. And his mother thinks that it's all right to be watching pornography and debating. Yes. And grandmother and I sort of worry about this. Are we justified or not, or what can be done, or what should mind our own business?
Well, you know, there are some concerns about watching pornography, especially obsessively, and some concerns that we weren't aware of necessarily in the past. What we are seeing with younger individuals coming into sex therapy who are watching an excessive amount of pornography is that they are having some episodes of erectile functioning and arousal issues.
I'm sorry, I don't know what that means.
That someone who is spending
A lot of time watching
pornography, what we're seeing is sometimes a decrease in ability to get aroused.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about pornography is that it takes someone out of reality. And when someone's life is consumed by that, so again, it's about moderation, and it's also about how it portrays individuals, particularly women. So it's not anything that I judge as much as I want people to be aware that it does have consequences socially, psychologically, relationally, and sometimes physically. So when someone is sort of sitting home and not getting out and not interacting socially with the world, that's never a good thing. And what we also know about pornography, excessive use does sort of affects the brain similar to a drug, in that the more you have, the more you need to get that hit and to get that high. And also we start to look at genre and images that we might never have anticipated that we would be attracted to, because the brain is needing more and more to experience that high. So it's not an innocent pastime, and it does have its consequences. So it is something to be talked about.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets out and he goes to school and does other things. He's 22. I don't know whether it's obsessive or not, but you know, like, how can this be addressed?
Well, I think the most important thing, I'm not sure, does your friend, have they spoken about it at all?
Well, she just spoke to her daughter recently, and, you know, we were just wondering if, I mean, I have no idea of how much he does this.
Yeah, and that's important to know. And
I just wondered what the research was. And
yeah, it's difficult,
too. Then you came on the air. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's difficult, too, because, you know, it's tough to jump in from, you know, having very little discussion about sex and sexuality to then addressing pornography with someone. When someone's missing work, when someone's stepping out and avoiding life, when someone's not, you know, getting fresh air and they're just hiding away with pornography, that's a real problem. So I think in all of this stuff, the takeaway from today's show is really about having the conversation about whatever topic it is. But it does have a psychological impact as well as it can have a physical. So it does warrant a conversation.
Well, this is the pornography nation. We know. Well, hold on a second. Hold on 1 second. This is a nation that is addicted to pornography. Mm-hmm. We know that because the internet for years didn't make a penny for anybody except in porno. And there are, as you know, there are channels on the TV and the rest of it which do, you know, porno in a quite attractive to people.
Absolutely. So, and women are actually watching and using pornography about 30% more than they ever have.
For what reasons?
Well, you know, it's a different psychological journey for women, because men, it's almost as though they're shamed if they don't watch pornography. It's expected.
Some of them are shamed because they do watch pornography.
Yeah, there's a lot of shame and a lot of hypocrisy around pornography. For women, it's a different journey, because they're not given the permission that men are to watch pornography. So it's often more secret. It's often more tucked away. It's not bragged about. And sometimes couples enjoy some of that together, and that's a very different scenario. So again, it's about talking about what's important and what, you know, what the consequences are of any decision.
Julie, going to have to let you go. Thanks for the great call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, now let's go to Andy in Kingston. All right, on the other side of the river. Andy, you're there.
Hi, yes, I am. Yes, I had a question. I've been in a relationship about 5 years, and during that time, my partner has gone through menopause, and her desire has become very, very much less than it was. We had a very satisfying sex life, and I'm just wondering if there's some place we can go to get some help with that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're certainly welcome to come on into the Capital Region Center for Sexual Health. Your scenario is very common to the individuals and couples that I work with. You know, nothing about sex and intimacy remains the same over the lifespan. So when things change and when things are dynamic and fluid, people can get nervous about it in terms of will it ever feel good again? Will I ever want to connect that way again? So it's about learning new skills and new ways of communicating with your partner to navigate the changes and to find ways that the two of you can connect emotionally and sexually that feels exciting and satisfying for both people.
Yes. Yes. Well, okay. That sounds great. Do you know of anybody in the Kingston area?
I don't know anybody in the Kingston area, actually. I'm just up the Northway on exit 10, so we're not too far away.
Okay.
The good thing about sex therapy, Andy, is that sometimes just a couple of visits can make a big difference for people. It doesn't have to be a big, long, drawn-out
Freudian affair.
Yeah, you know, sometimes people just need some permission, they need some ideas, they need some new ways to look at themselves, their relationship, and their bodies in light of the changes.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Bye bye. Let's go to George in Hunter. All right, George in Hunter, you're on.
Okay. My question has to do with your expertise and experience.
Okay.
Men, what is an orgasm? Okay. We know about getting hard. We know about moving it in a vagina, and then it squirts.
Okay. Okay. Look, I need to have some definition to this. What is your question, really?
Yeah, the question is, what is the feeling that a man gets? What are the one, two, or three feelings that a man gets in the orgasm itself? Is it just a squirt, or is it a physiological whole body thing?
Well,
Hold on. We're going to get you an answer.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The thing, George, is interesting about orgasm and ejaculation. Those are two separate things. And the ejaculation is when the fluid leaves the penis. However, you know, we have this idea from soap operas, TV, society, culture that, you know, it's always going to blow the roof off. And what we know is that orgasm and ejaculation is different for people at different times. Sometimes it's more of a whimper than a bang. It's not always the same, depending upon all kinds of factors such as stress, fatigue, the relationship, how you're feeling in general about your life and your health. So it sets us up for failure when we look to our orgasm and our sexual sensation as feeling the same every single time. So we need to expect variation. And sometimes we don't have orgasm or ejaculation, and that's okay too.
And is there a major difference between women and men's orgasms?
No, the one thing that is most in common is that they vary. Sometimes they're stronger than others. Sometimes they're not so much strong. And that depends upon, again, many, many factors that we're bringing into
it. So if a man has a good, strong orgasm, what does that feel like?
Well,
what does that affect?
It's different for every man, hopefully.
Well, could you name a couple of variations?
No. George, unless you really want to get it. Okay. Thank you very much, George. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Kerry in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Kerry is on line number 3. All right, Kerry, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay, my question is, I'm 67 years old, and I have an enlarged prostate, and I'm on a prescribed medication, finasteride. And since then, my sex life's no longer what it used to be, and I was wondering if there's any alternatives to that medication.
Right. Well, Kerry, I'm not sure if there's alternatives to the medication. But when you say that your sex life isn't what it used to be, what I'd like to say is really no one's is. And, you know, our sex life is fluid and dynamic. And when you think about life, there's not anything that remains the same. So a lot of the work I do is helping people understand the changes that they can expect over the lifetime and how to work with those changes to still have something satisfying and inspiring. But one of the big myths that we're sold is that, you know, what it was when I was 20 or 30 is going to be what it is when I'm 50 or 60. And again, that just sets us up for expectations that create, you know, detrimental feelings of disappointment and depression. So there, when you look at the rest of everything around you and in your life, nothing remains the same. So it's about figuring out, where am I at now? What are my physical challenges? And what can I do to create something that is satisfying for me? Oftentimes, too, we boil ourselves down to our genitals, whether the penis is working or not working, whether the vagina is excited or not excited. And you know, we are sexual beings from head to toe. And when we put the spotlight on the genitals, that's all we see. So if you broaden that spotlight to become an amazing lover using all kinds of other sensations and different parts of the body. But again, that's one of those areas we've been sold a bill of goods, that it's all about the genitals.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the call. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to talk to some other people. A couple of free lines. 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Delivery expanding to Gilderland, 518-432-0358. Atelier Rene Fine Framing Red Hook, a resource for custom-framed gifts for the holidays. Photos, art, needlework, diplomas, mirrors, gift cards, and more. AtelierReneFineFraming.com. Brattleboro Retreat, offering partial hospital and intensive outpatient care at the Birches Treatment Center. Full and half-day psychiatric and addiction treatment and on-campus housing available. BrattleboroRetreat.org/Birches. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And from H. Houston Sun True Value Hardware, Woodstock. Locally owned since 1932, offering holiday decorations and gifts for kitchen, workshop, and home. Behind every project is a true value. HHoust.com.
And we're back. Thank you, Zach Malloy. We're going to talk to some more people. Our guest is an amazing person. Dr. Bridget Finn, founder and president of the Capital Region Center for Sexual Health. Let's go to Stephanie. All right, yeah, let's go to Stephanie. All right, Stephanie, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi,
Stephanie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're there. You do your thing. Go ahead.
Oh, I think so. I'd be very interested to get her professional opinion about sex addiction. Mm-hmm. From reading online, there's kind of split opinions on whether it is a real thing or not. You know, some people say it's a diagnosable problem, and other people say it's just kind of an excuse for narcissistic cheaters.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of spinning off of that, you know, regardless if it's diagnosable or not, where do those type of behaviors kind of come from? Where are the roots, and what is the kind of outlook for changing those behaviors and
positive light.
Well, the outlook is pretty good. You know, you're absolutely correct that it is a controversial diagnosis. And I'm less concerned about labeling as much as I am about speaking with people about what the behavior is exactly and how much of their life it's consuming. Is it interfering with work? Is it interfering with social activities? Is it interfering with health and wellness in general? So, you know, and the treatment is not easy to find. I'll be honest with you about that, around the Capital Region in particular. And you're correct that it's sort of become, well, yeah, you say you have sex addiction once you get caught, right? So it is controversial. So there are similar 12-step programs, that type of addiction model that people do use and utilize and have a great deal of success with. The most important thing is if the person who's struggling is how they see it. Do they see it as an addiction? Do they see it as an overwhelming preoccupation? So yes, there is some controversy out there. There's also help. It's not easy to find. But again, be less concerned about the diagnosis and the label and more concerned about how it's impacting lifestyle overall.
Oh, okay. Just because from, you know, reading online, especially in forums and stuff, it just seems like the general outlook is very, very bleak. And, you know, a lot of partners who choose to stay with addicts, you know, just kind of see continued relapse for the rest of the relationship.
And what we know in particular is that these relationships are typically have other concerns too. So it kind of has a ripple effect into the relationship. So if someone is in a relationship with someone who's having sexual addictive behaviors, the relationship needs to be talked about as a whole as well.
Thank you, Stephanie. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, and now we'll go to Marlene in Boston Spa. Okay, Marlene in Boston Spa, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think something might have been missed. I wanted to respond really quickly to the grandmother who called in about her friend's grandson.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The information that he was a special needs person at age 22 didn't seem to come into consideration.
No,
and
you make a point.
I wanted to say that.
Yeah, you make a point.
Well, but the point is, I think that there are a lot of really tough conversations and areas that parents with kids on the spectrum, young men and women, need to wade into. And it tends to be fairly typical behavior for persons who aren't typically developing to, you know, come to control their ability to please themselves.
So
that's something parents really have to get involved with, because by and large, children on the spectrum, young adults, don't have regular opportunities.
Correct.
To have sexual pleasure from standard partners.
You're absolutely correct. And there's also a lack of permission and acknowledgement that this individual is a sexual being. We tend to not think that way because of the developmental disability. It's about acknowledging that we're all sexual beings, but that's a difficult conversation to have.
But I wanted to assure her that having worked with individuals on the spectrum, this is very typical 22-year-old male behavior.
So
that might give her a different way to see this rather than just another choreographic issue. Thanks.
Thank you. That was Marlene. Okay. So 1-800-348-2551. Let us go then to Emily in Kingston. All right. Emily, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Emily.
Hello. Okay, you can hear me. Cool.
Yes.
Okay, so hi, Doctor. This has been really awesome to listen to.
Great.
So I have a question about physicality. So my boyfriend and I have been together for about a year and a half. I love him to death, and he loves me, too. He's super attractive, but I don't know how to explain it except that he's kind of skinny and not the typical manly man that is, like, the epitome of girls' sexual desires.
Uh-huh.
And I am attracted to him, but at times I just feel like I know biologically there's certain things that people are attracted to, just based on, you know, like passing on your genes, and you want someone to have, you know, these certain qualities. And I don't want to tell him, you know, hey, could you work out a little more? I'm not sure how to go about this.
Well, You know, I think it's important to recognize and be honest about, you know, we are attracted to certain types of appearances. Physical attraction is hugely important when it comes to desire and arousal, but it's certainly not the only thing. It sounds like your question is what? How do I talk with him about looking different?
Yes, but I don't want him to look different, you know, just for me, you know, like, I want him to do it, you know, just to make himself feel good too. You know, like when a guy feels his best or a girl feels their best, you feel a lot better sexually.
Oh, absolutely. That's why earlier I spoke about physical, taking care of ourselves physically is important because it gives us a certain vibrancy. It's always good to encourage our partner into self-care, whether it be with physical activity or psychological awareness. So I think it sounds like a relatively good conversation to have. It sounds like you're being encouraging to do. Maybe you could do some things together.
On the other hand,
I would go through is to be more, I don't know, physically active together.
Yeah, why not? It's a great thing to do, and a lot of people enjoy sex and intimacy post physical workout.
On the other hand, I may just like to say that there comes a point at which everybody decides, okay, this person would be good for me, except I don't like his body or I don't like this or that. That's exactly what you were talking about earlier, right?
Yeah.
When you find a relationship, you really do... You shouldn't go in with the expectation you're going to change somebody, can you?
That's correct. No, we always want to encourage ourselves and our partners to take care of themselves. And we change over time, psychologically as well as physically. So that's a conversation that needs to happen again consistently. But everyone feels better when they're physically feeling better. So to me, it sounds like a great conversation to have with, hey, what can we do together? What would be fun to explore together as a physical activity? When we're physically active, we feel more desired and more desirous.
Okay, Emily, good call. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. And 1-800-348-2551. We got two people on the phone. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll go to Mike in Pittsfield. All right, Mike, you're on. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. A couple weeks ago, and the overnight programming run by the British, BBC, they didn't have a program like you're having now, but they did mention in Japan there was a study where the proliferation of pornography coincided with the decrease of birth, that they were decreasing the number of children they were producing. With the advent of pornography, like it was a choice and pornography actually won or is winning in Japan. I'm wondering what you think of that data. And the second part of the question is, could in fact pornography be some sort of like presciential sense that there are just too many people and like lemmings or any other, you know, like deer or any other animal will like, decrease their production, you know, their birthing, because the environment just cannot handle the number of mouths. Okay. What do you think of that?
Okay, well, I don't know that this is a question for a sex therapist. This may be more of a question for an anthropologist or for a sociologist. So we're going to let you go. Thank you. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Jason in Albany. Okay, Jason, you're on.
How you doing, sir?
Well, we're okay.
My only comment, I mean, it's like a comment and like also a quasi-statement, if you would, is the pornography thing, I think, is it can be utilized to your better. Sometimes you make love to your lover. Sometimes you get down hardcore. And sometimes I feel like it could expand you a little bit, you know what I mean, depending on how comfortable you are in sexuality.
Okay.
And that's what I had to say to sex therapy.
Okay, yeah, no, that's right.
There are couples who do enjoy sharing it together, and it can be something.
Yeah, I'm not saying, like, watch it together. I'm just saying, like, if you say you were to watch it habitually or something like that,
and I'm speaking objectively,
yeah.
you know, might see something that you're like, well, that's pretty cool. I could, like, do that. I mean, within a certain genre. I mean, there's some stuff that's just fetish things that, you know, that is contrived from whatever it may be, you know?
Right. It can certainly provide some ideas, but also keeping in mind that the expectations it create aren't necessarily based in reality. So yeah. We have to...
And this is a true story. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to show up like a pizza boy and, you know, some
you
kind of crazy
know.
Stuff like that.
You never know.
You know, but I also wanted to touch on, like, I'm a man's man. I'm a savage. And, when I'm done being intimate with a lover, I just give her a full body rub down or something like that. You have to always respect your lover, and if you can't know where she's at and how she feels, I don't think you're paying enough attention.
That's what
I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we can be pretty unconscious in our relationships, and we have to.
You should treat her like an equal. You should treat every woman like an equal. This is not 1950. We're not chauvinistic pigs. We should always treat our lover as an equal. And try to be aware of what she wants, because if you're not, you know, then all of a sudden she may find another lover.
And by the way, Your Honor, we thank you for that very good call, and we are out of that time because we have a couple more people we want to get to. Let's go to Jeff in Port Jervis. Jeff in Port Jervis, you're on. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I just would like to agree with the doctor regarding erectile dysfunction in males. I was in a destructive marriage 2007, 2008, and 2009,
mm-hmm.
and I developed type 2 diabetes, so my ability to get erections was really terrible. I've had to work out of it by going to the gym.
Yeah,
I am seeing a urologist, but it's a mountain to climb to get back your confidence and to get back your health, mm-hmm. to be able to have an active sex life.
Yes, it is. But you know what? It's a mountain that's worth climbing, right? So, you know, you need to have the correct resources. You need to be working with the professionals who can get you where you want to be. You need to check your expectations, and you need to be open to the fluidity and the dynamism of sexuality. It's not the same over time.
Jeff, thanks very
right.
much.
And I definitely am not 17 anymore.
None of us are, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. All right. Now we're going to go to Tommy in Saratoga. All right, Tommy, you're on. Go, Tommy.
Hi.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi, Doctor.
Hi.
I have a question. Are you familiar with the book Sex at Dawn?
I am not.
Oh, okay. Then I can't. Well,
tell me
it's
about
a book
it.
That... Well, it came out a couple of years ago. It's written by a couple. It takes an anthropological view of the evolution of sexuality and challenges a lot of our contemporary conceived ideas of sexuality, monogamy especially, mm-hmm. and explores. I mean, very, very liberating for women because it really presents women's sexuality in a way that I had never seen it portrayed before. Just very eye-opening. I've read it twice.
I'll have to look at it.
It's a book that Dan Savage had recommended it
mm-hmm.
to a gentleman who called up. Actually, the question was about, just sexual challenges and how he was feeling about some weird feelings. Fascinating book. So, wait.
Give us one takeaway that you had from the book that was an eye-opener for you.
Well, let's talk about women's... sexuality and the fact that monogamy is probably not necessarily in our nature, but it's something that has been constructed because it works for society. What's very good about the book is that the full first half of the book has very little to do with sexuality, and it really talks about a lot about the evolution of civilization and agriculture and how all of these things formed and left us with our present conceptions of
sexuality. I'd like to address the idea of monogamy. I don't see monogamy as the problem for people as much as I see monotony as the problem. People are bored. They're boring and they're bored. And we have this idea that we can just kind of sit back and it's all going to happen the way it happened when we first met. The difference is when we first met, our serotonin levels were flying. We were seducing. Sure. We were being attractive. We were dating. All of those things. And we demarcate that to the beginning of a relationship. When we move into a relationship, you know, quite frankly, we move into maintenance mode and we stop paying attention to that seduction and to that novelty. Seduction and novelty are the most important ingredients of an active, compelling, satisfying, intimate life with a partner, and they're the first things to go. And people get lazy, and if we were as unconscious in our jobs as we are our relationships, we'd be fired every single day. So we need to pay attention, and we need to actively participate in coming up with ideas to keep things exciting, to keep things fresh, and to keep things alive. So, you know, the idea of monogamy, yeah, it's debated and it's discussed and all of that, but I do like to talk, but people really want that to a large degree. So the question becomes, the question becomes, how willing are you to keep this going over the long haul? And it certainly isn't easy.
No. Tommy, Tommy, I got to let you go. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to leave on the line Franny from Copaig and Liz from Troy. So sorry that that is the case, but we are out of time. And I want to thank Dr. Bridget Mary Margaret Finn for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here
today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Vassa Brothers Medical Center, now specializing in macroplasty partial knee surfacing as an option to total knee replacement for early to mid-stage osteoarthritis. Healthquest.org/ortho. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones. Nurse Carol was standing by in case anything happened here. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wmc.org/voxpop. Stay tuned now for a little theme and then some news.